The UK's top accountancy firms face their biggest shakeup in decades. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Leisha Santarelli. Good morning. Most people usually only think of accountancy firms when it comes to filing taxes. But here in the UK, the so-called Big Four of EY, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Deloitte and KPMG are under scrutiny following a series of high-profile corporate collapses. This includes the construction firm Carillion, travel operator Thomas Cook, and most recently the German payments provider Wirecard. As a result, UK regulators have ordered the firms to separate their audit practices. Basically, these are independent checks on the financial health of a company from their consulting business by 2024. David Rule is the Executive Director for Supervision at the UK Financial Reporting Council.
We have two objectives. First is to ensure that people in the audit practice are focused above all on delivery of high quality audits in the public interest. And second is to improve the resilience of the market by ensuring that there are no cross subsidies between the audit practice and the rest of the firm. Certainly, people have pointed out that the majority of the earnings of these practices is now from non-audit work. There are benefits to keeping the firms together. It gives, importantly, the audit practice access to specialists in the rest of the firms, like forensic accountants and insolvency practitioners. And it also keeps the firms joined up with their global networks, which is vital when you have big multinational companies that they're auditing.
David Rule there. Staying in the UK, there's speculation Prime Minister Boris Johnson plans to start phasing out the use of existing Huawei equipment in the UK's 5G network as soon as this year. The move comes after the UK National Cybersecurity Centre reported that new US sanctions would raise the level of Huawei's security risks. The involvement of Huawei in 5G networks has become a delicate issue for governments around the world, partly due to the US-China trade war. Speaking of which, 2 years ago this week, the US kicked off that trade war with a series of tit-for-tat tariffs. The rivalry has since expanded beyond trade between the two countries, as the BBC's Karishma Vaswani explains from Singapore.
If you look at the state of relations between the United States and China since the trade war kicked off, they are at their frostiest in at least 40 years. The trade war has spilled over out of trade into areas like technology, military relations, things like scrutinizing of Chinese companies that are listed on the U.S. stock exchange. And that's making the relations between countries out here in Asia with each of these two superpowers also extremely challenging, because effectively they're being forced to choose, being asked to take sides on issues like which telecoms infrastructure giant they should go with for their 5G networks, as well as they're being persuaded by the US administrations to pull their companies out of China because of these tariffs. So I think it's fair to say these are some of the worst times we've seen in recent history between the United States and China.
Now, at the start of this week, which is the two-year anniversary of the US-China trade war, we're seeing dramatic moves in Chinese stocks. Shenzhen, Shanghai, up over 6%. What's happening there?
There have been calls in the state media in China to allow for a healthier economy, and many investors in China are seeing that as a signal from the government that economic development will be a priority as the country attempts to recover from the pandemic. Now, we have seen some signs that the Chinese economy is picking up. The data there has been relatively better than what we've seen in other countries. But I have to caveat that, Leisha, with the fact that this is still a very patchy recovery. And the consumption aspect of all of this, how much Chinese people are spending in stores, those data figures are still very weak. And I think this is a sentiment boost that you're seeing right now that is signaling to investors that this is the right time to start investing in the Chinese stock market.
The BBC's Asia business correspondent, Karishma Vaswani. Thanks.
Thank you, Leisha.
Let's take a quick check of the financial markets, because as you just heard, Greater China stocks rallied, closing nearly 6% higher in Shanghai and Shenzhen CSI 300. Over in India, the benchmark Sensex index is up 1.5%. That's despite the South Asian country overtaking Russia to have the world's third biggest coronavirus epidemic behind the US and Brazil. And in the last few hours, Uber has reportedly agreed to buy rival US food delivery startup Postmates in a $2.7 billion all-stock takeover. Now, while Americans were celebrating the 4th of July this past weekend, across the pond in Europe, many businesses were reopening to the public after months of lockdown. Today, the world-famous Louvre Museum in Paris is the latest to throw open its doors. These people were some of the first in line.
It's very important that all cultural places can welcome the public, because we need it, and they need public to survive too. So we're here for that.
Because the measures are a bit peculiar and there are fewer people who can go at the same time, it gives me an opportunity to go and see the Mona Lisa up close and not in the crowd. It's a bit selfish, but I think I'm lucky to be here for the first time to see the Louvre.
The BBC's Paris correspondent Lucy Williamson explains what it's going to be like inside.
The Louvre will look and feel very different when it opens today. One-way systems will map routes through the museum. Entry will be by specific time slots, and everyone over the age of 11 will need to wear a mask. Most of the galleries will be open, including tourist favourites like the Venus de Milo, the Mona Lisa, and the French crown jewels. Spaced queuing for the Mona Lisa will mean each visitor gets the chance to stand in front of the painting for a moment. The Louvre usually welcomes 10 million visitors a year, the vast majority of them from outside France. The museum's president, Jean-Luc Martinez, told one newspaper that if Europe did not open its borders to the rest of the world this summer, he expected numbers to drop by 80% this year.
Now, it didn't take a pandemic to make economic inequality a persistent challenge in America. We're interested in how inequality can play out within families. Did the pre-COVID economy fail some members of your family while rewarding others? How does that play out when different generations get together? We'd love to hear about your experiences. Email us using the address morningreport@marketplace.org. Thanks for listening. In London, I'm Leisha Santarelli with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.